So Om Ganat Vranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Midikam Yenatasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. So today we are celebrating Vaishnava Diksha. And there's many different types of Diksha or initiation. I'm going to type. It's all right. Whoops. What are you doing? Is it coming? Yes, it's coming. I think everyone can hear me pretty much without the microphone. Yeah. It's not absolutely necessary. So, Prabhupada would call Vaishnava Diksha initiation. And it's interesting, the word initiation is quite interesting. Generally, when you talk about initiation, it means one or two things. It means to start something, to initiate a particular activity, or like to start a journey, let's initiate our journey. Another thing is it means to join a particular society, or a particular group, or a particular religion. Like to join, initiate. It's sort of like a ritual of joining a particular organization, or religion, or whatever. So anyway, I'd like to talk about it in both of those contexts. Of course, Prabhupada often would say, use initiation in the context of beginning something. Because oftentimes people would think that when they get initiated, they've reached the goal. However, initiation is one of the preliminary practices in Krishna consciousness. As we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions, which are repeated by Rupa Goswami. Maybe I should use this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions, which are repeated by Srila Rupa Goswami, we find the whole progressive march of devotional service described as follows. Ado shradatata sadhu sangota bhajana kriya. That's the first step. And then ado nartan vritti shat. And then after nartan vritti shat. And then nishta. And then after that, ruchi. And then ashakti. And then bhava, and then prema. So there's all these different steps. Of course, I'll describe what the steps are. Adoshada means, in the beginning, there has to be a little bit of shraddha. Shraddha means faith. Faith means faith in the Vedic literatures, faith in the disciplic succession, faith in the holy names. Because if one doesn't have any faith, or at least initial faith, one will not be interested in associating with the devotees. One may be curious, but one will not associate with the devotees unless one has some initial faith and maybe what they're doing is right. So there's adosh shraddha. Adosh means in the beginning the shraddha. And then tata sadhu sangota. Then one begins to associate with the sadhus. Of course, one has to know who a sadhu is. The word sadhu means basically one who is situated in sat. That means eternality. Most people are situated in asat. That means they're engaged in temporary activities of this world. There's so many temporary activities in this world. And then sadhu sangota. So one begins to associate with the sadhus. And at the same time, one begins to reject association with the asat sangha, the non-sadhus. So this is a very important point. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, he said, satsanga tyag e vaishnavachar. One of the qualities of a devotee is to reject association with those who are not concerned with spiritual life, who are materialists, basically interested in only increasing their enjoyment in this world or even in the process of impersonal liberation. So, because whoever you associate with, you become like that person. Like Prabhupada would often give the example that if you associate with a drunkard, you'll become a drunkard. And even we see that Lord Krishna's own son, whose name was Boma, he associated with some bad people, demoniac people. They, people who had the same quality as Ravana, and he became like Ravana. In fact, the Lord himself had to kill his son Boma, who later on became known as Bomasura, because this Boma had kidnapped 16,100 princesses, you know, very demoniac person, just because he had that association. And even, there's two more examples I'll give, Mainda and Dvidvita. Like those of you who know the Ramayana, know that these two gorillas were associates of Lord Ramchandra, and they helped Lord Ramchandra conquer over Ravana and Lanka. And so these two developed a bad attitude due to bad association, and they left Ram consciousness. They were no longer chanting Ram Nam Sachahe. They were chanting Hiranyakashipu Nam Sachahe instead of Ram Nam Sachahe, just because of bad association. So anyway, so let's get back to the point. Sadhu Sangota. So when one begins to associate with the sadhus, one begins to do the same thing the sadhus are doing. Just like you see the children come to the temple, and they also start chanting. Even though if they're left alone, generally they don't chant. But if you bring them in temple, they'll start dancing and chanting, do all sorts of nice things, along with the devotees, other devotees. Even though the little children, like they're 1 year old or 6 months old, don't really know what they're doing. So that's the value of sadhu sangha. Then bhajana kriya, they begin to perform the bhajana activities. And the bhajana kriya activities are such that we're going to be describing today, like chanting 16 rounds, following the principles of Krishna consciousness, no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling, offering your food to Krishna, simple things. They're very, very simple principles. It's called bhajana kriya. So then as one performs bhajana kriya, one begins to get rid of things he or she doesn't want, which are called anarthas. Anarthas are things like kamakrodha, madamatsarya, bhaya, things like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, etc. Modern society, they're trying to increase these things. They have pills to increase lust. They have advertisements to increase greed. Like if you go on the television, even with the little children, if the children watch these cartoons, I'm sure they have cartoons for children, then there's so many advertisements that you need this, you need that. And then they go to their parents and demand those things. That's greed. It increases the greed. And, of course, the parents' greed is increased by advertisements, too. Just like recently, they came out with a new iPhone. Maybe you heard about this before. Some of you work in the tech sector, and maybe some of you don't. The number 5. And people were lining up days before they actually had them in the store, just to get one. I mean, they were sleeping basically outside the Apple stores, just to get a phone that will allow them to talk nonsense with each other. In other words, as they said in the 1960s, the medium has actually become the message rather than the message itself, which is really interesting. What that means is what you say is not important, but the machine that you use to say it with is actually more important, or the video, whatever you do with it, is more important. So one must have, you know, people think, I have to have the latest iPhone or the latest, what is that, Galaxy, you know, Samsung Galaxy 3. It's another one, right? You've heard about that before, too? Of course, Naveen knows about all these things. I have to have the latest one. Or the women, they're thinking, I have to have the latest style. I have to get my designer clothes. They're thinking, I have to go to Paris, right? Because in Paris, there's all these nice stores. What do they call it? Gucci and all these other stores. You've heard of them before? You haven't heard of them? Ask the women. They've heard of them. Ask your daughters. They know. And nice perfume and everything. So the men have different desires for things than women. You know, the men. And so anyway, so modern society is increasing these things. You know, designer jeans. I mean, you can spend $500 for a pair of blue jeans. I had one disciple. He had very messy clothes. It was in some country in Europe where they have designer clothes. And I said to him, you got to buy better clothes. Get yourself some nice clothes. So he went to the store. And he bought these blue jeans that had holes in them. And I asked him, you know, how much did you pay for those? did you get them, you know, where the poor people drop off their clothes or something like that? And he said, no, I paid 200 euros for them. You have to buy, so this is what they do with the meeting. You have to buy clothes that have holes in them. And it's considered the style. So in this, it's true. I don't know if you have that here in Australia. Same thing. So, and always they're changing the style. And they also have this other thing called planned obsolescence, where something breaks down after some time. Like the light bulb, for example, was originally designed. It could last for years and years and years. But then they planned it out so it would only last for a few thousand hours. So you'd have to keep buying more. So in this way, modern society, the business interests are exploiting people to be more greedy, more lusty, to be more angry, too. It's like you all like to watch these games on television, like soccer, right? So that just increases the anger, because if you watch people who are watching these games, they just like look extremely angry. I mean, sometimes, of course, I don't generally watch them, but I'm in the airport, and you go by these what's called sports bars. You've seen them before? Where all the people are watching the television where there's some game going on, and they're so angry. You know, they're drinking, and they're angry, intoxication, so many things. So, anyway, so the point is we have to do the opposite. We have to give up lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, and fear. Fear is a big one. Of course, in the marketing field, they use fear to sell so many things. I was just at someone's house, and there was an insurance salesman there. And they were selling this person insurance, and they said, what if this happens? What if that happens? You know, you have to buy this in case that happens. And I was telling them, you know, what about insurance that in case the person dies, there's a Hare Krishna devotee who's flown in immediately to chant for them. There should be that. You want to add on in the insurance? You know, a mantra part of the insurance, you know, that you get to have a Hare Krishna devotee present when you're leaving your body. So, yeah, so there's so much fear. So when one becomes Krishna conscious, one gives up all these, especially fear, avaya, sattva, sham, shuddhi, jnana, yoga, vibhastatihi. One becomes situated in fearlessness because he has this knowledge that he's not the body. And his knowledge that whatever devotional service he's doing, swapam up yasya dharmasya, trayate mahato bayat, will continue in the next life. He's free from the most dangerous type of fear. He doesn't have to worry about becoming an animal or anything like that. Just like sometimes I'm in an airplane. Yesterday I was in an airplane, and the wind was very high. And so people were getting scared in the airplane, and especially the ladies. They were screaming. Because, you know, it's at the Sydney airport, there's a lot of wind sometimes. So the airplane was going like this, and the ladies were screaming, and they were embracing people next to them. Fortunately, they didn't embrace me. I would have slapped them if they did that. Then they would have been more afraid. But, so they're so afraid. And I was thinking, as, you know, the plane was shaking, they said, you know, if we die, we die. No problem. I'll just go on serving Krishna. I was in anxiety about dying. So a devotee is free from these anarthas. So that's anartha nivritti shat. And then after that, when you're freed from these anarthas, which cause unsteadiness, then you can be steady in devotional service. That's called nishta. Steady means that you have no more, let's say, lust, anger, greed, illusion, or fear. And you can just chant and engage in bhakti, and you have complete conviction that just simply by serving Krishna, everything will be accomplished. So that's nishta. And then after nishta comes the real nectar, which is called ruchi. Ruchi means taste. So you get such a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna that you don't want to give it up 24 hours a day. Kirtaniya Siddhahari. But as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions, that you have to give up the anarthas first. Trinadapi, Sunuichena, Torodapi, Sahishnana, Mandina, Manadena, Kirtaniya, Siddhahari. And also you have to give up Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kapitam, Ba, Jagadisha, Kamaye, Mama Janmani, Janmanishvare, Bhavatad, Bhakti, Ahoy, Tikituye. You simply have to desire to serve Krishna. So you get this ruchi, this taste. So you're in complete ecstasy. And then when you're in complete ecstasy, the bhavas develop. Bhava means emotion. That means anytime you see something that is connected to Krishna, or Krishna himself, of course, like a peacock feather, you start shaking in ecstasy. Like there was one great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His name was Mukunda. He was a doctor, and he was serving the Muslim government. So one day he was giving advice to what's called the Nawab Hussein Shah, you know, one of the main Muslim people. And he was up there on the dais or podium with this Muslim governor. And he was giving him medical advice. At the same time, someone began to fan the Muslim governor with a peacock fan. So as soon as he saw that peacock fan, what did it remind him of, Isha? Krishna, because Krishna wears a peacock feather. Reminds him of a mobile phone, too. This is ubiquitous. That means it's everywhere, these mobile phones. Even in India, they have all the rickshaw wallahs, they're talking on their mobile phones. So as soon as he saw this peacock feather, which reminded him of Krishna, he immediately fell to the ground unconscious. That's called Vyabhachari Bhava. That's another type of classification of emotions. So that's so much ecstasy that anything you see reminds you of Krishna. You become so happy that you lose consciousness almost. Wouldn't that be nice? Really nice. Prabhupada exhibited this a few times by accident when devotees reminded him of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and he was touring around the world preaching. He went into trance for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes at a time. So this is, to achieve this stage is really wonderful. And Narottama Das Thakur phrase, Goranga Balite Havi Pulaka Shavir Hari Hari, that one, when or when will that day be mine when I chant Goranga, that means Lord Chaitanya's name, will I feel the hairs on my body stand on end? And also Ashrutananga Bhajo, tears come from my eyes like torrents of rain. So this is an advanced stage of devotional service. And of course, after Bhava, I forgot one stage, which is called Ashakti. That means one is completely attached to Krishna. That comes after Ruchi. And then after Bhava, you have Prema. And Prema means that you simply love Krishna so much. That whatever Krishna does, you will love him. Whether he helped you, gives you what you want, or he doesn't give you what you want, you'll still love him. I was telling the devotees in Fiji, don't be disappointed that when you pray to Krishna, he doesn't give you what you want. Krishna is not your order supplier. He's not your daddy. And even your daddy doesn't always give you what you want. Isn't that true, Isha? I mean, do you lose faith in your father just because he doesn't give you whatever you want? No, he's still your father. But people are so crazy that in relationship to God, they ask him something, and if he doesn't supply immediately, they want to become atheists. There are so many atheists in the world. Atheist means they're against God. We should not become angry with him. We can pray to him, we can ask him for something, but if he doesn't do it, it's not good for us. Like a child may ask the parent, please give me a lot of sweets. And the parent will say, eat your vegetables first. Yeah. Right? Did you ever hear that? And so that's kindness. The child is thinking, this is not kind. This parent is so cruel. Right? If the parent actually loved me, the child is thinking, he would give me the sweets. But the symptom of love is that you do what's best for the person that you love, not what they want. If you do what they want, you may be destroying them, hurting their health, or hurting them spiritually. So we don't give people what they want, we give people what they need. There's a difference between the two. And people generally don't understand what they need. Everyone knows what they want. So therefore, that's pure devotional service. So this initiation is one of the first steps. It's part of the Bhajana Kriya process in devotional service. So that's one explanation of the word initiation. The other explanation that I said before is to join something. To join a movement or to join a society. So what you're joining here is what's called a sampradaya. A sampradaya is a disciplic succession. And there are four main disciplic successions. One of them is from Lord Shiva, another one is from Lakshmi, another one is from the four Kumaras. And the one that we're members of is the Brahma Sampradaya, the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And the interesting thing is if you don't receive your knowledge through a bona fide disciplic succession, your knowledge is faulty. Why do we say your knowledge is faulty? Because it comes from imperfect senses. It comes from imperfect judgment, people who are cheating others, and people who have been cheated, and people make mistakes, right? Just like we were talking, I actually just read something from Einstein, who's a very interesting person. I mean, there's some debate as whether he's an atheist or a theist or something like that. But he wrote that religions are man-made. And I would say that 99% of the time, he's absolutely correct. Krishna even says that in the Gita, when Arjuna asked the question, when one follows a particular faith and his faith is not based on Shastra, that is Shastra coming down from Krishna, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, Arjuna asks, is his faith in goodness, passion, or ignorance? And Krishna answers, according to the person's modes, he develops a faith based on those modes. In other words, it's a faulty faith. It's based on the modes of passion, goodness, or ignorance. I mean, a faith in the mode of ignorance, you're worshiping ghosts and spirits, like voodoo. You've heard of voodoo before? When I worked in South America, there were so many voodoo people. They would come in the temple sometimes. We would even go preach at voodoo conventions. Understand? They were very favorable to Krishna Khan. They liked the prasad. So, or in the mode of passion, you have the worship of the demigods or the demons. Actually, the worship of the demons, mode of goodness, material goodness, the demigods. So you sort of invent all these different things. Like right now, you have this particular period of time, Pitapak, right? And that's sort of like a mode of passion thing that's been invented. It's not there in the Vedic literatures, I hate to let you know. It's not there. You can look for it, you won't find it. It's something that's just like people came up with, like as a nice ritual in certain modes of nature. Rituals are interesting because they generally come, not all rituals, many rituals are transcendental or help with the transcendental, but rituals generally come from something that somebody started and then somebody copied. Like Prabhupada talked about the man who was doing a fire sacrifice and he had a cat. The cat kept getting too close to the fire. So he had to tie the cat up to a pillar. So when his disciples saw that, they thought this is the way you do a fire sacrifice. So when they wrote their Archanapadati, that means the deity worship manual, they said every time you have a fire sacrifice, you have to find a cat and tie him to a pillar. So there was a whole cat ritual that started during fire sacrifice. So many, many rituals, not the ones we're doing here today, of course, but many rituals in different religions or so-called spiritual groups, they start like that. I mean, let's take yoga, for example. I mean, some of you have heard of yoga. And there's so many yoga studios here in Sydney and everywhere around the world where they teach hundreds of postures. I have one disciple who knows 1,000 postures. He's an amazing person. He's actually one of the 10 top posture yogis in the world. Anyway, some of you might have met him. I don't think any of you met him. Anyway, he's from Finland. He spends like 4 hours a day doing postures. So people say, wow, this is yoga. No, it's not. It has nothing to do with yoga. It's postures. For example, we find the original teacher of yoga is called Patanjali. And he only taught two postures. So where do all these other postures come from? Some people just dream them up, they add it, and it's just man-made stuff. It's not actually descending. Our knowledge is descending, coming from Krishna. Dhammam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Therefore, we understand it's perfect. So that's disciplic succession. You're joining a disciplic succession of spiritual masters, pure spiritual masters who have passed this knowledge down carefully, like one carries a mango or passes a mango down from a mango tree, and the mango is not bruised by the time it gets down to the last person. So that's a very important point. And particularly in our disciplic succession, it passes down through Lord Brahma, Narada Muni, Srila Vyasadeva, all the way down to the present day and age to Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gorkhashore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, and ultimately our spiritual masters, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, and his followers. So ultimately, we are connecting with Srila Prabhupada, because this is Srila Prabhupada's movement, too. Although Srila Prabhupada's followers initiate, and they have their own disciples, everyone in the Krishna Consciousness Movement is Srila Prabhupada's follower, because Prabhupada is the founder, acharya of this society. He sets the standard. We can't adjust things. There's a certain right or adhikar that different people have in the disciplic succession to adjust things. Even an acharya can't adjust things beyond a certain point. For example, let's say someone is a main acharya, like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Srila Prabhupada. They can't say, well, instead of chanting Hare Krishna, we're going to start chanting some other mantra. We're going to make up a mantra, Nitai Gaur, Radhe Shyam, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, like some bogus group did. And that the leader of that group later on got leprosy and he died. So that's another point. So one, because the point is, Sampradaya Vinaya Mantras Te Nishpala Mataha, that a mantra must come down through a disciplic succession. So even Srila Prabhupada did not have the right to chant the Hare, to change the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You understand? Nor, as some people say, that Srila Prabhupada changed the initiation system. He didn't. You know, there's these people called Ritviks. Sounds like a frog's call. Ritvik, 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 like that. But yeah, an acharya doesn't have that right to change a basic system like that. He can change the presentation. Like Prabhupada certainly could adjust the number of rounds to 16 rather than 64. He could have sometimes ladies living in the temple as brahmacharinis. I mean, this is just external methods, presentation. Or Prabhupada could cross an ocean, which was prohibited previously for acharyas. So the essence is there. So that's the founder acharya. He can't change things beyond a certain point. But those who are gurus working under the founder acharya, their ability to change things is even more limited. For example, I could not change things or make things differently than the 16 rounds a day. I could not say, well, chant 4 rounds a day and chant Hari, and that's fine. That's not my prerogative, or it's called adhikar. I can only do things within a certain limit. Only Krishna is independent. That's a very important point to understand. Only Krishna has no limits. He can do anything. He can change anything he wants. Of course, it's not that Krishna does do everything in terms of change everything. Krishna himself decides to observe certain limits. I mean, for example, someone asked me the other day, can Krishna destroy the soul if he wants to? And my answer is, Krishna can do anything he wants, but he won't do it, because he doesn't want to. So they can't demand that Krishna does things that he doesn't want to, because Krishna is a person. He only does things he wants to, and that's, he's independent. An independent person does anything he wants at any time he wants, and he doesn't have to worry about paying for it, or going to jail, repercussions like that. That's God. He's called Swarat. But each of us is dependent. So one is joining the Krishna Consciousness Movement, Srila Prabhupada's movement, ISKCON, and at the time of initiation, one is promising to remain faithful to Srila Prabhupada's institution and serve Srila Prabhupada's institution. And this institution is the institution meant for saving the world, ultimately. I mean, it's going to take some time. It's not that, you know, 5 years from now, the PM of Australia is going to be chanting Hare Krishna and taking initiation here. Well, that would be nice, but it's not going to happen so quickly. When I first joined the movement in 1971, I thought, you know, give it 5 or 10 years, and we're going to just take over the world. And that's a young person. A young person is oftentimes, let me just put that back in, a young person is oftentimes disappointed or has unrealistic expectations. And I certainly, you know, I certainly had those unrealistic expectations, was overly enthusiastic, and that's not unusual. So in any case, one should stay part of Prabhupada's society and progress gradually in devotional service. So as I mentioned briefly before, how does one progress briefly? How does one progress quickly in devotional service? By observing the rules and regulations, which the candidates vow to follow. And in addition, avoiding offenses and chanting the holy names of the Lord. The offenses are as follows, and I'll go through them very briefly. First offense is to blaspheme the devotees of the Lord who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. Of course, that's called the mad elephant offense. If one commits that offense, one loses the desire even to chant. And then the next offense is to consider the names of the demigods, like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Ganesh, etc., to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Just like recently, you had Ganesh Chaturdasi. You know that? And people come up with all these different rituals in Bombay, for example, or Mumbai. They take all these Ganesh deities to the ocean, and they just leave them there, and then the municipal bulldozer has to come and crush them all. This is terrible. I mean, it's a great offense to Ganesh. We don't want to offend the demigods either. Of course, there's that interesting story on Ganesh Chaturdasi. If you see the moon, guess what happens? Does anyone know? Yeah, you lose your reputation. So 5,000 years ago, Krishna by accident saw the moon. What happened?
He got blamed
for stealing Shyamantaka jewel. So don't. I was taking a japa walk on Ganesh Chaturdasi, and I was just looking at the ground. I never looked up the whole time because I was scared that if I looked up, so you know these things are true. However, we don't chant the names of the demigods thinking they're equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Vishnu is God, Ekala Ishvara, Krishna, Arasabda Vritya. And any name of Krishna you can chant. You can chant Krishna's name, Ram's name, Vishnu's name, Narayan's name. That's fine. Korma's name, Matsya's name, Nrsingha's name, Varaha's name. We don't distinguish between the names of God in terms of your ability to chant them. Of course, the most powerful name is Krishna, which is 3 times more powerful than Ram, and Ram is more 1,000 times more powerful than Vishnu. So, anyway, the next offense is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. The bona fide spiritual master represents Krishna. He's like the ambassador from Krishna. He's not Krishna. Some groups actually, after some time, take their guru as Krishna, which is a great offense. And there's some groups, I'm not going to mention the names, that actually the guru never said he was Krishna, and then they start a whole organization based on their supposition or speculation that he is Krishna, and they put him on the altar just with Krishna. But he never says he's Krishna. It's kind of foolish. And so that's disobey the order of the spiritual master. Next offense is to blaspheme Vedic literatures or any literatures which are in concordance, in other words, teach the same thing as the Vedic literatures, to worship God. Next offense is to consider the glories of the holy name as imagination. Next offense is to give some mundane interpretation, speculative interpretation on the holy names. Next offense is to commit sins on the strength of chanting. In other words, some people think that by chanting they can get rid of all their karma and continue sinning. They drink liquor, then they chant Hare Krishna between each drink, each gulp of liquor. Next offense is to consider Hare Krishna or chanting Hare Krishna to be a ritualistic activity like that in the Vedic literatures, karma kandya activity. Next offense is to instruct faithless persons about the intimate glories of the Lord. And the final offense is to not have complete faith in the holy names and maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions in the matter. But also, it's offensive to be inattentive while chanting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the inattention while chanting is the cause of the other offenses. So we should understand that. So anyway, and then in addition, those are the negative things. Positively, you should study Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshashtika to understand the right mood of chanting. It's not that we want to just concentrate on the negative, what not to do, but we want to talk about what to do. And the right mood is elaborately described in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's 8 verses, in which he glorifies the holy name and he glorifies the different stages of chanting the Lord's holy names. It's called the Shikshashtika. Everyone should learn these verses, beginning with Cheto Darpanam Arjanam, which is a general glorification of the holy name, and ending with the Shleshava Pada Panashtamam, which is the topmost prema platform of devotional service or of chanting the holy name. So study those things regularly. Okay, so that's the brief explanation of what initiation is. So then we'll continue with the initiation process. The next step in initiation is to have the aspirant, that means candidate for initiation, who's Madhu, come up and take her vows. But first, we consider Prabhupada's back there because it's like a Vyasasana, actually, it's not an asana, a Vyasa stand. But it's a similar thing. So could you offer your obeisances to Prabhupada and the deities and then myself, and then we'll question you about the 4 regulated principles: no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex, and no kava. That's number 5. For those of you from Fiji, you know what I'm talking about. And then how many rounds daily? No, later on someone will put it on as soon as she sits down after she gets her name. And then after that, we'll proceed with the fire portion, the havan, for the sacrifice. And during the fire sacrifice, I'm going to do my deity puja too, so that'll be very auspicious during the same time. Okay, then you can offer your obeisances to the deities. So he comes from a family of many, many devotees. Such an auspicious family. In the Gita, Krishna says that a very fortunate birth that one attains when one is advanced in devotional service comes when one takes birth in a family of transcendentalists. He says such a birth is very rare. So it's a very rare birth to be born in such a nice family, isn't it? So many devotees in the family. In my family, there's no devotees. My real family, everyone's a devotee. But in the blood family, the genetic family, the bodily blood family, I don't know. Well, maybe now one is my father passed away, maybe he's born in a devotee family by now. It's possible. So, okay, what are the 4 regulative principles?
No meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and no gambling.
Gambling, very good. And how many rounds do you chant every day?
16 rounds.
Okay, 16 rounds. So with your right hand, you get the beads. So your name now is Madanasundari Devidasi. Madanasundari Devidasi Kijai. That's the name of Radharani, of course. Madanasundari. Madanasundari. Madana means like Cupid. Sundari means, of course, very beautiful. That's a feminine. Masculine is Sundara, feminine is Sundari. You understand? Radharani's name is also Sundari. That's another name of Radharani. So Madana Sundari. I mean, she who is a servant of Radharani, who is so beautiful that she attracts Cupid, or Krishna who attracts Cupid, okay? Okay, very nice. So you can sit down. We'll have the Hare Bol. And then someone should put her neck bead on. You can sit down in the cushion there.